Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Kathy Kennedy, who is the Sales and Marketing Director for Fleet Miami. Hi, Kathy. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You look wonderful.
Thank you.
And before we talk about Fleet Miami and what it is, can you tell us about you? Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Jacksonville, Florida on a Navy base.
Wow.
But I grew up most of my life in Connecticut.
So you're a Connecticut girl, basically.
Basically a Connecticut girl.
So what attracted you to the water, though?
Well, I got into yachting accidentally. I've been in luxury marketing my whole career, and I ended up about 10 years ago starting to work for Director Shipyards. They're based in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and they built the largest yacht ever built in the United States.
No kidding.
Which most people don't know, 281 feet.
Who owns that, by the way?
I cannot say.
Oh.
Something about yachting. It's very private.
Oh, tell me that. Nobody wants to say.
The boat was named Cakewalk, and you can Google it and find out.
Cakewalk.
Yes.
Oh, fascinating.
It has now been sold and is under a different name now.
Interesting. Okay. So it used to be with a yacht, you had two options. One was owning a yacht, and the other was chartering it. But now Fleet Miami offers a third option. What is that? Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely.
Great.
We have a yacht membership club. So instead of owning, which is a lot of hassle with owning, you have to deal with the crew and the maintenance and all types of issues and headaches. And chartering, there's other complications. With a yacht membership club, you pretty much just pay for what you use, and you have options basically all over the world where you can go to Miami, you can go to the Bahamas, the Med, D.C., go out in the Hamptons on a yacht.
Speaking of which, when you were saying there's a yacht now in Sag Harbor, or is it in Greenport?
Actually, she's based in Greenport,
okay.
And she's an 87-foot Warren. Her name is Andiamo,
mm-hmm.
An amazing little yacht. She's
That's
out here for the
yacht.
Summer.
Yeah.
Yes, you've been on board.
I've been on that. It's fantastic.
But she's very sporty, perfect for a day boat, for a week charter.
Oh, interesting. Now, you're talking about the membership. There's different levels to the membership. Can you expand on that? Too?
Absolutely. You can buy in at $250,000, $500,000, or $1 million, and what you pay for is what you use. So you're not paying for the crew or the paint job or the maintenance on the engine. You pay for the actual time you use. So like a lot of yacht owners have a boat that they never get to use. They end up figuring out they spent 10 days and how much that actually cost them. With something like this, you're basically only paying for what you use.
So that's based on the hours? Is the membership, like, say, at 100, I forgot the numbers you just threw at me, but is it based upon the hours?
Yes, you could book it out for a day, a half day. Our larger super yachts, we don't do half days, but it's a day,
right.
Multiple days.
That's probably
days,
more like
a week
or something, right?
But you can do, which is great about Fleet Miami, you can do a long weekend on our super yacht, which you can't do with traditional charter.
Wow. So, you know, one of the things I thought that was interesting is you also have a yacht down in Washington. Is that right?
We have two.
Two of them.
Right in Georgetown Harbor.
Okay.
And they go out
every
day. Where
do they go? Did they go to the Chesapeake? The basin there? Or?
They could, and they do. Typically, they go for half day and full day charters, and they're very busy. You go see the monuments, have dinner, the best seat in the house in D.C.
Huh. The best seat.
It's better view than you're going to get in any restaurant.
This
it's a
is
great
true.
Way to entertain.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Now, how much notice do you need to give to book a yacht as a member? I mean, can I call up? Say I'm a member.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to give you 24 hours notice, a week's notice, a month's notice?
It does depend on if it's booked and the size of the boat. The smaller boats we can do with 24-hour notice, sometimes same day. The larger boats we normally need a day or two or three to get the crew in line, provision, get in place.
Right. Okay. Now, one of the things, too, you offer a trial membership. What is that?
It's you get the same perks, a lot of the same perks as membership, but not all the perks. So trial membership, you can come in and do a long weekend, a day, whichever works for you on any of our boats, what is the right fit for you, at a discount. And part of Fleet Miami is you get a discount off the retail rate. What you don't get, what you get with membership, is you can cancel last minute. You get rain dates, the kids sick. You with the full membership, you get first pick of the calendar.
So if something happens, I don't mean to interrupt, but something happens, you know, some sort of family crisis or something like that, you can just call and say, look, I can't make it. I know it's Friday and we're going out tomorrow.
Absolutely. As a member, you're treated like you own the yacht. So a yacht, you wouldn't get penalized because you didn't use it and charged extra.
Right.
So you can cancel.
That's pretty good. Huh.
But you can try out the discount as a trial membership.
Right. One of the things you use that I've seen is that the term is called the Fleet Miami Experience. What is that?
Our experience is the same on no matter what size yacht you go on. So if you're on our Fed ship, a 45-meter Fed ship in the Med, you're going to have the same exact experience that you do in Miami for a four-hour cruise on a 56-foot boat. Our crew is cross-trained, and on top of that, they know everything about you. Once you've been on one of our yachts, we get to know your likes, your dislikes. So it's almost like you're just returning home, no matter what size boat you're on.
So in other words, even the culinary experience, if you like certain dishes, that'll be supplied the next time you come out.
Because a perfect example. Our chefs talk to each other, and they take detailed notes. So if there's something you didn't like, or you have a specific crazy thing you know you need flown in, or a drink that you always want, you'll be greeted with that drink.
Wow. So is there how does it work on the wines? Like, do you come equipped with wines, or is it a list that you provide and say, what wines do you want?
Well, different clients and members do it different ways.
Okay.
Some people will come on their private jet with their own wines because they have special vineyards and that they want to bring, or they give us a list that we will go find.
Oh, I understand. So that leads me into the other questions. Like you just said, they come in on their private jet. So how does it work if I want to take one of the yachts out, say, in the Amalfi Coast? Okay, because I think you're also positioned there, right?
Yes, we are.
Right. So how does that work? Okay, I say, okay, I'm coming out August 6th, well, whatever, you know, arbitrary date you want to pick. And I'm flying into where, Naples, and you come and pick me up into Naples? Is that how that works, or Positano? I mean, I don't know.
Well, basically what happens is every itinerary is extremely custom. So what you've looked at is a basic itinerary that we have on our website and a trip we do often. And a client will talk with the captain and have a meeting with the chief stew, and we get to what they exactly want. And so they will completely define their own itinerary. And based on that, yes, wherever they fly in, we will come meet them, pick them up. A lot of times I like to come a day or two early, explore the city. Then we go pick them up at the hotel, take a tender ride out to the yacht.
And
or come up to the dock. We could do it all different ways. Some people like to be at the dock. Some people like to be at anchor.
Right. That sounds wonderful. So how can somebody get in contact with you to take advantage of what Miami Fleet has to offer?
Well, we have a website, fleetmiami.com. We're on Instagram and Facebook. But also they could reach me directly at kkennedy@fleetmiami.com.
Wonderful. Kathy, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with our next guest, Executive Director of the Bay Street Theater, Tracy Mitchell. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have as my guest, Tracy Mitchell, who is the Executive Director of the Bay Street Theater. Hi, Tracy. How are you today?
Hi, John. I'm great. Thanks you for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. You've been on the program before, and we didn't get to wrap up a couple things that I was curious about. And we were talking about the Bay Street Theater, and also that there's Evita is probably already played by this point. But my daughter, Kira Christopher, just came off of a national tour of Cabaret. So she was telling me some things about, she's at that juncture now of whether to get, you know, with Actors Equity. But she had mentioned something that I wasn't aware of, is that as an Actors Equity theater, one of the rules is, and correct me, I think she said it was either 5 minutes or 5 miles, the cast has to be within the proximity of...
So, yes, a lot of people don't really understand that we're not what is known as summer stock. We are a year-round professional equity theater, and that means that we operate under equity guidelines. And so equity is the union that handles the actors, all of the actors and actresses, and the stage managers.
And
so,
I wasn't aware of that
part.
Yes,
the stage managers as well. And so there's a huge volume of rules and regulations.
See, this is what I find fascinating. Right.
Dependent upon how many actors you're hiring for not just a particular show, but for the entire season. And you have to put them up in a certain level of housing. And as you were getting at, if we don't put them up within a half mile of the theater, we can put them up further away, but then we must provide transportation. So as you can imagine, a half mile in the village of Sag Harbor is about the most expensive housing you can find. So it really is for us, depending upon the year, one of our largest, next to an actual production, it is the largest expense, other than actual talent and payroll for that talent. But it is right now, we spend between $350,000 a year on housing.
That's amazing.
So we have 16 houses rented, or that's what we had this summer. And we also use the Sag Harbor Hotel for our one-nighters or people that come in and are only here for a day or two.
Now, did you ever think of not being Actors Equity Theater, like you say, summer stock? Because I know a lot of summer stock, they don't have this issue.
Yeah, no, we've always wanted to maintain our status as a professional regional theater. We develop programming that much of it goes on to other places. So we will produce our own work, and some of it goes to Broadway or off-Broadway. This past 2 years, we've had things go to the Amundsen Theater. Grey Gardens went there in California. We went had another show go to the Rubicon Theater in north of L.A.
Now, are you producers of those shows?
We are producers of those shows.
So it's similar like Roundabout Theater.
Correct.
Okay,
exactly.
Gotcha.
Like Roundabout, like Manhattan Theater Club.
Right.
Company.
Oh, that is interesting. I wasn't aware of that. So what I find amazing is the support that you need. I mean, it's when you say those kind of numbers, and
yes.
And we're just talking about housing.
Yes, we have a $4 million operating budget.
Wow.
And $2 million of that comes from ticket sales. And the rest must be raised in fundraising and donations.
Right.
Now, those donations come from not just individuals. They may come from foundations. They may come through some grants. Very little comes from the government anymore. So it's quite a heavy lift each year.
Jeez.
So every January 1, we're back to zero.
Well, it brightens the following year. It's like, okay, we got to work again, right?
Exactly.
So, for example, you had the on Long Wharf the gala,
sure,
which I understand was quite a success.
It was a huge hit.
Now, my question is, what are you going to do next year?
That's a very good question. we've been speaking to people since this winter about what we might do, where we might go. Possibly coming up with new ideas of how we do the gala, even as opposed to just simply renting a tent on someone else's property and trying to do the exact same thing. Well, it'll never be the exact same thing, because this year, and as we've done in the past 5 years, we actually put a show on in the theater first with top name talent, and then everyone goes from there into the tent. So of course, when we move,
you won't have that opportunity.
Gotcha. So
How about bringing in barges?
We've thought about that. We have indeed.
We've
thought about that actually for housing too, but didn't work out so well.
Well, the town probably wouldn't.
A couple of houseboats never hurt anybody. But
yeah, exactly. The Gomorrah out there, right?
Yeah.
Jeez, that is amazing. Just curious, a few years back, there was a backlash on that reading of The Prince of Egypt in Mashimoe Park. Did that have any effect on your artistic choices going forward from there?
Well, I would say this. Bay Street has always tried to be a home for diverse audiences as well as artists. And not just in terms of the aesthetics, but in terms of race, ethnicity, gender, age, whatever it might be. So we're always trying to have a balance there. And I think if anything, the controversy made us double down and think even more, more fully as to every aspect. Whenever we're looking at anything we do, we look at it vis-a-vis diversity and how best to be inclusive with everybody.
Right. So, Evita, you've got, as you said, the cast.
Evita, we had a full, all the adults, there's only one child in the cast, but all the adults were all Latino.
Wow. Now, and you have them in housing someplace.
Yes. And houses
that's part of
all
that
around.
Budget. That's part
that's
of that budget.
Part of that budget. And, you know, again, with equity, you're only allowed two people. Two people can share a bathroom, two actors, but they must have their own rooms. So it's very different than, say, our production housing or our intern housing.
So you can't put eight people in a...
No.
No, I understand. And, well, the codes now have changed,
right,
too. So you also have an educational program. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, we have a terrific year-round, if I might say so, education program, which we've been expanding every year. The biggest part of that is the show that we do in our fall season. And we try and hire as many local equity actors as we can and a few non-equity as well. And we put on a program called Literature Live, which I think many of your listeners have heard. And that is a show where we bus in school kids from middle school and high schools from all across Long Island. And they see a full equity production just the way we do our main stage with lights and full costumes and props, everything. And it's a piece of, it's a play that's chosen from the American classic literature that the children would be studying. So this year we're doing The Great Gatsby.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
And mine too. So, you know, we do that for the school students during the week and for the general public on the weekends.
That is wonderful. So, Tracy, how can someone donate or support the Bay Street Theater?
Well, there's all different ways, and it's not just money. If you want to volunteer your time, we can always use extra hands on deck. But we love checks too. And you can go to baystreet.org or call us in our development office at 631-725-0818 or simply buy tickets and come see what we do. Our box office is 631-725-9500.
And you're always putting on great shows too, Tracy.
Thank you.
Tracy, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with my next guest, Ed Nealon of AC&E Home Inspections. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Ed Nealon, who is the owner of AC&E Home Inspections. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Actually, Ed, I'm so happy you came on the program because you have such a very interesting background. You used to be an aerospace engineer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. And so how does one segue from that to home inspections?
Well, it is kind of a stretch, but growing up my entire life, I worked with my stepdad. He managed an apartment complex, so I learned a lot about different aspects of buildings early. And, I was doing aerospace engineering for a while, and started getting a little burnt out with that and decided I wanted to go and open up my own company. And here I am 20 years later, and now I probably have the largest home inspection company here on Long Island. We currently have 16 engineers here on staff, and in total, we've done over 100,000 home and engineering inspections.
That's amazing. I mean, you're almost like a one-stop shop, you know, in the sense that I know you offer, besides having that many engineers on staff, you offer a lot of other programs that many other home inspectors don't offer. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. I just was curious about, it wasn't until 2005 that New York State required home inspectors to be licensed. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it was probably a very good thing to try to straighten the industry out a little bit, having you know, the industry become uniform and start some type of licensing program, which I think it was a good thing to try to help things out.
So somebody could say, I'm a home inspector and not have any background whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much to this job, and especially because I've been doing this for 21 years. You know, the classes now, it's like a two-week class and then 100 hours. With that, there is...
Now, when you say 100 hours, is that 100 hours in class or 100 hours?
No, it's 100 hours of they have to do of a hands-on, you know, type of program.
Okay.
But even with that, you know, there's so much in this business to actually know and to understand that you wouldn't even be scratching the surface with that. I mean, you can just imagine all the different heating systems that are out there and all the different electrical panels that are actually out there, all the different systems to understand and know. It's just an amazing amount of things that you really, really, truly have to know. Like here at AC&E, we only have engineers on staff. That's all we use is engineers.
So it's not just home inspectors. To be an engineer, you have to be...
it's 4 years of college.
College, right. Thank you.
That is correct.
Right.
And all the engineers here, I mean, they all have different backgrounds, you know, but I think just being an engineer, you know, establishes, you know, a certain level of education for them to start out with. And with that, you know, we can fine-tune, you know, what they know, you know, into more into home inspections. And we branch out into so many different things that we do. We just don't do home inspections. You know, it really, we branch out pretty much to anything that you need to close a loan today, you know, we do, whether it be mold inspections or soil testing or tank locating or... well water or thermal imaging or windstorms or structure inspections. You know, there's just so many different things that you need sometimes to close on a loan, and we just happen to be around for so long that, you know, we're constantly out there updating all the licenses for all the different things that you need.
Well, that's what I meant earlier about a one-stop shop. It used to be that, okay, you get a home inspector, but if you needed a pest inspection, you'd have to... Yeah.
Well, and it's still like that with most companies. It's
right.
Just that, you know, what we do here is, you know, we go that extra mile, you know, to do to get the licensing that we need. Like, New York State finally got on the board of doing mold licensing this year.
I guess after, what was that, Sandy, right?
Sandy, because what happened was there were so many complaints of people who were out there doing mold cleanups after Sandy, that mold came back in so many homes that people were complaining to the state saying, look, you know, you got to get on board. We need something to, you know, so that everybody's doing the same thing. So they came out with mold licensing, both for the cleanup and for the inspection portion of it. So we were one of the first companies in New York State to get licensed. My actual number is 004.
Hmm.
You know, and it's another good step because there were so many people doing things so many different ways and a lot of it the wrong way that, you know, it was kind of good that New York State got on board with, you know, kind of like Florida, because Florida has a licensing for mold as well.
Right, exactly. Now, just curiosity, have you noticed any increase in soil testing being asked by certain attorneys when it comes to previously buried oil tanks, even though there's a certificate of abandonment? I've noticed that.
Yeah, and what you're noticing is exactly that. A lot of attorneys, you know, and I still get phone calls all the time about this, and that's a really good question because a lot of people don't understand it. And some attorneys don't understand it, but some do. That certificate of abandonment that people give out is in Suffolk County is generated by the company itself. It's not generated by the state in any way, shape, or form. So let's say you had a leaking tank on your property.
Okay.
And you really didn't want anybody to find out or know. When you call up to get your tank abandoned, they only ask you a verbal question. Is the tank a leaking tank? And if you say, no, it's not a leaking tank, they say, okay, we'll abandon it. We can do sand, foam, or slurry. And they give you a certificate that says this tank's been legally abandoned according to the Suffolk County guidelines. Meanwhile, nobody did any form of either PID testing or sending the soil out to the lab for testing. So that piece of paper that you got is really only generated by the company that did the abandonment, and no soil testing was actually done. So a lot of these lawyers now are catching on that the paperwork really has no backbone to it, not like Nassau County, where Nassau County is all in-ground tanks are governed by the Department of Health. So the Department of Health is actually overseeing the abandonments in Nassau County, where it's not being done in Suffolk County.
Right, right. Now, another thing I find fascinating is that your company, you do inspections 7 days a week.
Well, we have 16 engineers. So.
Right. So you can work on the weekends, which I find very laudatory. I can't believe this, but I'm going to have you come back on the program again because there's some other things I wanted to talk to you about.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.